Hanks for the memories. You've got a friend in us. This is episode 11, Nothing in Common, from 1986. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I am Joey Lewandowski, and with us today is no one, because no one signed up for this movie, because why would they?
They were spared.
I can't handle it. Mike, this early Hanks is killing me.
Dude, I'm with you. Like, when you're like JFC Hanks, like, what is happening? I mean, look, like, I started editing an episode during this movie. Like, I needed something to, like, do while watching this. It was crazy.
This is not necessarily the worst Hanks movie that we've covered so far. I still think that honor goes to Mazes and Monsters, although...
But that's fun.
But
it has something. It has Pardue. It's got craziness. Like, there's something there that I never saw before. This is like, I've seen this a billion times.
That's true. I might move this down. This is such a mess of a movie that makes... I don't know if it knows what it wants to be. And what's really a bummer, and not that I have any particular affection toward him, but this is directed by Gary Marshall. Like, he's made really good, fun movies, and yet this is a turd.
And it's funny that Hanks is going to work with Penny Marshall, and has worked with him on Bosom Buddies for an episode, but they're going to do League of Their Own and stuff.
Like, sure.
That Marshall magic just isn't there today.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up Bosom Buddies, because the only thing that was getting me through the early parts of this movie were, it feels like a spiritual sequel in sorts to Bosom Buddies.
Yes!
That he's an ad man, that he's like a wacky goofball, that he's got, you know, strange, useless on-screen skills. Like, there's one point where he's on the phone and he puts like a piece of popcorn on his fingers and then like slaps his wrist and the popcorn jumps up into his mouth. Like, things like that. He's drumming on everything. Like, it feels like Kip.
Yep, it feels like Kip, like, if there was no Henry. Like, Henry went off and became a famous author. And there's even a line in here where he's like, I'm not here to make my great American novel. I'm here to do advertising. I was like, holy shit. Like, what in Bosom Buddies land is happening?
Also, I would say it's his most sex-crazed character since Bosom Buddies. Like, he is a fiend. And that is apparently the only thing in common between he and his father, Jackie Gleason, that they could both... Jackie Gleason says to him, we always talk a girl into bed when they're just shopping. They're shopping in a grocery store and Hanks is buying his dad porno mags. Like, I don't know what is happening.
Yeah, I was very confused and sort of like, there's such a kick in my step after The Money Pit, you know, and I feel like I just tripped down a hill watching this movie. I mean, I'm still game, don't get me wrong, like, I'm got up and brushed myself off, but there's so much Hanks here that I'd never recognized. It felt almost more like a Robin Williams role or something at times.
That's not a bad call.
Even he has, like, no offense, like, I feel like he can pull off, like, that sex appeal that's going on in this movie for the character a little better than Hanks. It just kind of came across as awkward for me.
It did a little bit, and he is really, like, he's shamelessly hitting on everyone, and not only that, but, like, he's, like, successfully wooing people in this movie. Like, he's not only sex-crazed, but, like, desirable. And again, we've talked about this maybe on Hanks of the Memories, maybe on Cruise Club, I don't remember which half of the Tom-Tom, but, like, Tom Cruise, firmly a sex symbol. Tom Hanks, not so much. And I know that there are many women out there who are attracted to Tom Hanks, but I also just, you know, it still feels like a weird kind of role for Tom Hanks.
Yeah, you know, I was actually getting a lot of Rain Man vibes from this movie. Like, it feels like he's playing more of that Cruise character, but he can't quite pull it off. Like, it's not that he doesn't have, like, the charm or confidence, but I think it actually just comes down to the look for some of it. Like, I don't know, but it just felt like a parallel movie in a lot of ways, because they're both sort of dealing with family members that, you know, need assistance, and it's sort of impeding on their lives, and they have to learn how to, like, sort of get over it and deal with all that and everything.
I wrote down Rain Man because at one point in this movie, you know, the big account, like, Hanks is an ad exec, and the big account that they get is this airline, and they're in a meeting, and they're like, well, what about our safety records? Who cares? Blah, 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 blah. And Hanks is like, who cares about safety records? And I was like, Rain Man does. He only wants to fly Qantas because they don't crash. But for that one person, it matters. For everybody else, you know, Hanks's arguments in this are good. You know, I think it's just a weird movie, man, because this is a movie where he is an ad exec, and he's, like, good at his job and career-focused, obviously, and driven and successful, and then the world collapses around him, and his parents split up, his dad has diabetes that's untreated, his mom wants to re-enter the dating scene, he's for some reason continuing to lean on his ex-girlfriend, who, like, very clearly does not need him, really bothered me at the end when they get back together, because, like, that shouldn't happen, that's just a happy ending.
This is comfortable. Like, that's a total Mazes and Monsters ending, when they're, like, on the bench by the lake, and it's very sort of, what?
And, you know, it's sort of Scrooged in that way. It's every movie. I mean, it's so many movies where it's like, you shouldn't focus only on your job. You should focus on your family. But it also doesn't work in that it's tonally inconsistent from start to finish.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was also getting Sweet November vibes, right? Ooh. Like, there you have, like, a crazy ad man who, you know, whose life has changed. Like, it's all turned upside down. And that, like, not for nothing, like, at least that is consistent. Like, it may not be great, right? But, like, it establishes and, like, maintains a certain tone, which is, like, the romance comedy. Here, I have no idea, like, what it wants to be. Like, it wants you to laugh so hard, and then it wants you to cry as much as possible, and I don't do either. I'm annoyed, and I'm kind of bored, and I feel kind of bad about it, too, because I like Hanks, and I'm sort of a Jackie Gleason fan. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of his stuff, but I know him from, like, The Toy around this time. I've seen a lot of Honeymooners and stuff, so, you know, I was just upset that they couldn't find better material to sort of shine with.
This feels just like an opportunity for Jackie Gleason to, like, show off his dramatic acting chops. So apparently, there's not that much trivia on IMDb about this movie, because why would there be? Like, this can't be a huge movie. I actually want to look up the box office stuff, but it seemed like most of the trivia was around his character. So here's what I got about Jackie Gleason. Gary Marshall apparently would not make this movie without Jackie Gleason, and Jackie Gleason did not want to make this movie. He was like, I'm done with acting. Jackie Gleason at the time was dying of colon cancer, liver cancer, thrombosed hemorrhoids, diabetes, and phlebitis. Like, he is in rough shape. He wound up dying, I think, a year after this movie came out. Like, he was just on, you know, his last legs. And Gary Marshall said to him, do you really want to be remembered for Smokey and the Bandit 3? And so Jackie Gleason was like, well, okay.
Yeah, he should have said, of course I do. No, those movies are so much more fun. Okay, but I get his point. I understand what he means.
And so he did this. So this movie made $32 million, which is not terrible. It opened in 8th place with $3.5 million. It opened the same weekend that Friday the 13th Part 6. And we just went through this because we just watched Boy in Blue for Cage Club Revisited, and we talked about this. So it opened the same weekend as Friday the 13th Part 6 and Howard the Duck, and number one in the box office was Aliens.
I was at Howard the Duck. I tell the story on Third Times about how my cousin took me to Aliens when I was way too young. So that was this year, huh? What people came for was probably Jackie Gleason and Hanks, right? This has, like, star appeal, like Gary Marshall, like all this kind of thing, and it feels like it should work, but there's something that makes it come across as, like, one of those Lifetime movies or something, right? It reminds me of, like, early Keanu, like Brotherhood of Justice level types of production.
Oh, it's definitely an after-school special kind of movie, but, like, the production quality is higher. Like, I think it's a good-looking movie. I think it's put together well. It's just boring and inconsistent. The most notable thing, and I've started doing this looking for connections to other Cage Club properties, Gary Marshall, of course, directed the Zac Efron classic New Year's Eve, so never forget that. But more importantly, the cinematography was done by John A. Alonzo, a name I did not know, but he had shot Scarface, Chinatown, Harold and Maude, Steel Magnolias, Vanishing Point, Runaway.
Holy shit.
A movie fueled by cocaine, and Mike Manzi favorite, Cool World.
Holy shit. Wow. Someone actually shot that movie?
Apparently.
That's amazing.
That was kind of like, you know, for the guy who shot Scarface in Chinatown to shoot also this movie, like, forget it, Jake.
That's what's so funny about Hanks, too, is, like, last week we had, like, this incredible cinematographer who shot, like, The Godfather. Yep. And then it's like, I also shot The Money Pit.
Yep. It's weird, man. I don't know. The only other trivia that I have, so I can get out as part of my notes, is that John Goodman was considered for the Tom Hanks role, and I think that would have worked well, too. Although, I don't know, that sex appeal, I don't know, that would have been sort of strange there, too.
Yeah, but it would have looked like Jackie Gleason's son a little more, right? Like, Hanks and Gleason, I don't get, like, a familial relation or between, or even the woman who's playing his mother. Like, I don't pick up that, like, any of them are together with each other.
The one comparison or connection I got like that was that his ex-girlfriend, who he eventually winds up getting back with, the guy that she's dating, I guess, or sleeping with, or whatever, when Hank shows up drunk in the middle of the night, like, you know, down on his luck, he looks like Tom Hanks. Like, he's just got that curly, short brown hair and just feels like she's got a type. And I don't know if that's intentional or not.
Well, he's got a type too, Hanks. Like, she's another, you know, tall blonde, right? Like, we've got that with Sunny, with Madison. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like we've had that a lot down the line. Even in One Red Shoe, I believe the love interest was a blonde, so.
Well, I mean, he's with Celia Ward for most of this movie. He's beautiful and, like, gorgeous, composed, yeah, and everything.
And I actually like their meet. Like, I like how...
Oh, yeah, me too.
You know, like, the reveal that she's the daughter of the big account and is actually, you know, money bucks and all that kind of thing. So
there is some weird gender politics here at play, which actually reminded me of Austin's comment on our Cocktail episode over in Cruise Club, where, remember at the end of Cocktail, where Cruise is like, I hope if the baby's a boy, he takes over the business, and I hope if the baby's a girl, she marries a good man. It's like, what? And then here, it's the reverse, but also almost as troubling, where we're talking because the dad is the owner of the airline, or Celia Ward's dad is the owner of the airline, and Celia Ward is this, like, you know, rising star in the corporate world, and he's like, I raised her to be a CEO, I raised her like a man. And I was just like, what? I mean, I know it's the 80s, but what?
And not only the 80s, but that character, you know, probably born in, like, the 30s and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, like, raised in the late 40s and 50s. So, like, yeah, that was just brainwashed growing up and stuff and all that. But I know, we're still trying to shake that, but...
Yeah. So what was your favorite part? If you had to pick a favorite part, what was your favorite part of Nothing in Common?
This is tough. Like, I don't want to say, like, this is a terrible movie. I just didn't really...
Oh, it's a terrible movie.
Okay, it's a terrible movie. But I'm trying not to be, like, too mean toward it. But, like, I was just shocked how much I just did not like this. Like, right from the jump.
It's just boring.
I think my favorite part turned out to be kind of, like... It's kind of a joke, but, like, whatever. Like, the idea... Like, it almost drove me mad. I started laughing so fucking hard, you're never gonna believe it, but there is an actual song in this movie called Nothing in Common.
It's a theme song.
It's the damn theme song, and it came on, and I was like, no. Like,
yeah.
Why are they doing it with this movie? And then there's, like, more montage in this than Rocky IV. That was... insane. I think that's my second favorite part, is like, oh, we're just gonna, like, take this full scene and play music over it and chop it down a little bit, but you're still gonna see their mouths move. That,
yeah,
you know, I was like, wait a second, the ball's on Gary Marshall right now. So, you know, it's either the song or the overuse of montage.
The montage, that one montage in the middle is where he's doing that useless popcorn skill, I think. And also, right before that montage, there's a great moment where Hanks gives his mom a puppy, but it's the way that he pulls it out of his bag. He's just like, oh, I got one other thing. Oh, it's a puppy. It's just like, what? I loved it. It didn't make really any sense, but I loved it. My favorite moment is just about everything that Hector Elizondo did, because I think he's killing it in this movie. I think Celia Ward's great. I think Hanks can be good in this. I think Hector Elizondo... across the board, I feel like, for the most part, the actors are all doing well. Maybe the parents, maybe Jackie Gleason and maybe Hanks's mom are stumbling a little bit, but I think that's more so because they don't know, like, what is going on. But Hector Elizondo as his boss, who is both good at his job but also, like, desperately trying to find a way to cover up his male pattern baldness, I love. Also, wild story about my hair blindness. He looks like Dan Castellaneta does now, where it's a bald head and goatee and stuff, and I was trying to figure out who Dan Castellaneta, aka Homer Simpson, was in this movie, and I was like, is that him? And I was like, no, that's not him. But, like, my hair blindness, which normally happens because of hair, it was in a situation where I had no hair that it struck, and I've never had that happen before. This is a wild turn of events.
That's great. Yeah, I loved Hector Elizondo. I like how he's, like, second build, too, and everything.
Because he's normally just, like, an extra. He's in all of Gary Marshall's movies, but he's usually, like, a small part, right? Like, he's not usually, like, the star.
No, and he's not the star here. He's a solid supporting player here, but what I love about his character is, like, he's Hanks's boss, and Hanks at the end, like, kind of fucks up royally, right? Like,
oh, yeah,
tanks the whole account at the end, and he comes in, his boss comes in, and he's like, don't worry about it, it's not the end of the world, you know. I was like, holy shit, that's awesome.
Yep.
Like, usually the boss comes in and, like, chews him out and he gets fired, or he yells at him and he's like, one more screw up, and he comes and it's just like, he's such a nice, like, nurturing boss and everything. Yep. And Hanks has actually been quite supportive of him getting a rug and all that kind of thing and everything. So they did have a very nice relationship. I was very surprised it was in this movie.
You know, what actually really surprised me about this movie is that for a client that is so family focused, like the entire ad campaign that they do is like the airline that brings families together, right? They're filming this commercial about grandma visiting mom, visiting whatever.
Toretto Airlines, bringing family together.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, but considering the reason Hanks, like, really loses his mind at the end here is because of family, because his dad is having, like, a tough time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, his dad's gonna get his foot cut off, yeah.
From untreated diabetes. And I was thinking that, like, you know, he was gonna make this whole thing, and, like, you think that he was gonna get fired, but, you know, I thought that the owner was gonna be like, this is exactly the kind of familial passion that we want. Like, this is the story that we want to tell or whatever. But no, he's like, you're fired. Like, he puts hands on him. Hanks with a real hard F.
I know.
He says, don't you ever fucking put your hands on me again. I was like, whoa, Hanks, okay. And then that's it. But I thought, based on how this movie had set up, like, this is the image we're portraying for this airline, especially the father-daughter relationship and, like, Hanks and the daughter and stuff, like, I thought this might have worked in his favor, but nope.
Yeah, it's funny. We get Hanks' daddy issues again. I think Larson mentioned, you know, to watch out for that last week. But this is, like, the third movie in the row with family sort of at the core of it. And it's weird, like, at the end there, you're right, like, it just goes to show, like, they're not about family, they're liars or whatever, they're into the money and stuff, and because, like, she's the guy's only daughter, like, there's no other brothers, or, like, he doesn't have, like, a big family, I don't even think we meet the mother or any of that kind of thing, and so, like, it's kind of interesting thinking about it now, how they were using that family facade just to, like, you know, they didn't believe in it, but Hanks really does by the end, but I just gotta say, like, we find out that, like, Hanks looks at his dad's foot without his shoe on, and then, like, the last 30 minutes suddenly change into, like, you know, diabetes awareness movie and everything, and, like, I'm not, like, against that or anything, but it's just crazy how the movie was like, oh, finally found its focus with 30 minutes remaining, and then, like, you know, with that boardroom scene, it all tried to come bring everything together, just not very successfully.
Well, the weird thing is that the movie's description, the actual plot summary, is that on his way up the corporate ladder, David Basner confronts his greatest challenge, his father. And like, the poster, all the marketing is like Hanks against Gleason. Like, the two of these guys are going to be butting heads, but they need to find a way to get together or whatever, and sort of coexist. It's not until an hour into this movie, this movie's also 2 hours long, it's a solid 2 hours long. It's not until an hour into this movie that Hanks' dad, that Jackie Gleason, calls and is like, I need your help, you need to take care of me. I was like, what was the first hour of this movie about? How was the first hour, which I like more than the second hour, don't get me wrong, but why is that an hour long before the actual, like, why is that not the break into two? Why is that not 25 minutes in?
Dude, it's super unbalanced. Like, they try to do a thing where we're going to cut back between Hanks at his job doing successful, and then Gleason at his job failing and eventually getting fired, and I just thought it was very uncomfortable that he sells children's clothing and he's like this 79-year-old man, like, walking around playgrounds, like, patting kids on the, I don't know, I just got a creepy vibe from that whole thing. I don't know why it needed to be that,
right?
But I thought that we were gonna cut back and forth a lot more, because, like, we spend so much time with Hanks, and then when we go to Gleason, it's like, I'm getting a divorce. It's like, what? And then we spend so much time with Hanks, and then it's back to Gleason. He's like, I got fired today, I'm canned. And it's like, wait, what? And then we spend all this time with Hanks, and finally he has to move in with his dad and stuff, and it's like, okay, it's been an hour, but, like, we really could have cut this down a lot, I feel.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to say too much Hanks, but I think there's too much Hanks.
I think there's too much, like, feel-good movie, because, like, it's clear that the movie, and that at least, you know, the screenwriter or Gary Marshall or whoever's vision for what this movie is not to be a feel-good movie. And I feel like there's just too much of that up front. Like, it lulls you into this false sense of security. It's like, you're here because you might have seen The Money Pit earlier this year. You know, you saw Splash. You saw, you know, these goofy movies with Tom Hanks as his lovable lead. Here's a movie that, like, we're going to sell you on this, and then, just kidding, drama. Diabetes. It's like, what?
Yeah, and it also feels like it doesn't have the confidence in Hanks, maybe, to be a straight drama, right? Like, he's such an annoying character in this movie. Like, everything's a fucking joke. And, like, I feel like that one secretary who he just bothers, and he's bothering in the closing credits and every, you know, did you watch that part at all where they have, like, extra footage? There's, like, the one lady who works there that just isn't standing for any of his crap. And I feel like that. That's me.
Oh, yeah. The worst character in this movie, because she doesn't change. Like, I don't know why she's there. She's always humorless, and I guess that's the joke, but why is that there? Why do they call back to that?
I think for me it's to show that, like, not everybody thinks that Tom Hanks's character is, you know, that funny or that cool, and, you know, and I think he comes to feel like, it comes to seem like, you know, he relies on his comedy too much. Like, even his boss tells him, don't forget to be funny, like, always be funny, like, all this. So I feel like if they just changed his character to try and be less like that, that's why I got, like, a Robin Williams vibe from it, because he's just manic. And I feel like if he wasn't, like, this manic jokester, maybe this could have been, like, a better drama.
I guess. I really don't know, man. There's one point in this movie where Hanks mimes a blowjob with his entire torso. Did you catch that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to see this. I don't want America's dad to be, like, pretending to give another man a blowjob. Like, he's trying to get advertising inroads with clients at this bar, and he's friends with the bartender. He's like, if you find out what company they're with, I'll hook you up with my friend. And she's like, oh, that sounds good. And then he just goes off. He's just like, basically, we don't hear what he's saying, but if you talk to her, she'll blow you. And it's like, what? What? And this is a PG rated movie that also has that, and also has Hanks drop the hard F later. Like, it just, I don't understand.
Yeah, that's what I mean when I was like, I don't recognize this Hanks. Like, this doesn't feel like last week's Hanks or Hanks to come or anything. Like, the hard F really threw me. Like, when we're introduced to him and he's like under the covers with this girl, and then they pull out and it turns out he's like banging a stewardess like mid-flight,
which I loved. I did love that. I don't want to, that's not the Hanks that I know, but I love the weird, like, I thought that was, like, another example of, like, the madcap, like, I guess this is the kind of movie it's going to be, but you think he's in bed with this woman, and it turns out he's on a plane, and then it turns out that they're in coach, shared with, like, everybody, and also she's the stewardess. Like, it's this wild thing. I liked it. I don't know that it makes sense. I don't know that I want to see it in the movie, but I would be lying if I said I didn't laugh.
It's a funny sequence. Like, it's a good reveal. It keeps peeling back. Like, it's a great joke with multiple punchlines, but it just doesn't, like, belong. Like, that's how I felt. Like, oh, I was like, we're getting this movie, and then it's like, no, like, we never get back there again, you know, as far as comedy, as far as, like, cleverness, as far as, like, any of that kind of stuff. So I don't know, it kind of bothered me, because I was like, oh man, like, they're just trying to, like, force this on us, and I don't think it needed it, to be honest. Like, I feel like we could have just gotten a very straightforward movie here.
There's also a point in this movie where horses have sex.
Oh shit,
it mirrors Hanks and Celia Ward, and they get so turned on by watching the horses have sex that they go and bone in the grass.
It's like almost like Equus or something. Like, I was going, like, I couldn't believe what I was watching, this PG rated movie, and I'm definitely like, those horses are gonna fuck, and then Hanks is gonna fuck, and I'm like, oh, I can't take it.
Yeah, no, it happened. It all happened. I also want to point out, I'm just going through my notes chronologically because I don't have a ton of them, but when they do that pitch where we have Dan Castellaneta doing these voices, that there's basically three people doing voices of family members, one person narrating, one woman playing guitar and doing voices, and then Hank sort of guiding the narrative, if you will. They're doing this very emotional thing, which is what I was describing before about, like, this is the era that brings families together. And I was just thinking, you know, I know it's a wildly different medium and it's a different time and all this different stuff, but a show that I've talked about on a couple episodes that we've recorded lately that I've not finished but I want to keep watching, in Mad Men, obviously about the same kind of world. And at the end of the first season, I've watched the first two, at the end of the first season, he does this, like, Don Draper does this, like, incredibly emotional pitch about Kodak and how Kodak is, like, this carousel, like the photo carousel or whatever, that, like,
yeah,
this is your family memories, and, like, the way that it's shot and the music, and I'm getting chills thinking about it right now. Like, it's
so
incredible.
Good.
And here, it's, like, the same kind of effect within the movie, like, oh, this is what we want, but, like, there's no emotional punch there. Like, it just feels kind of goofy and wacky and, like, trying to tug on heartstrings, but for whatever reason, the movie's not successful in that, and it just kind of, it's, again, I don't want to compare it to Mad Men, because that's 20 years later, and, you know, we had learned so much about storytelling and about filmmaking, and it's a different medium, and it's a slower story and everything.
And it's a different era, yeah.
But still, you know, when you have Exhibit A and Exhibit B, it's hard not to really kind of compare the two.
Yeah, and even Exhibit C, it's a hot dog. It's a hot dog.
Truly.
It's
yes.
A hot dog. Mm-hmm. Like, there was so much, there was even more power behind that scene, I feel. This scene just felt like, to me, it felt like cool kids not trying their hardest and thinking that they can just get by. Like, maybe that's not what they're doing in the pitch or anything, but that's how the sequence felt to me. Just felt like they were too cool for it or something and not into it enough. I just didn't buy it.
Hanks and Jackie Gleason have your best friend is your dick, and Hank says, and where'd I learn that? Your best friend is your dick. And then Jackie Gleason's like, the four of us will go out for lunch someday. It's like, what is happening in this movie?
Joey, you never ever talked to your dad like that before?
No, not even a little bit.
I think that's the thing, is like, I always got along with my parents. Well, yeah. You know, for the most part, like, and I was never estranged from them at any moment, or so I never had this kind of, I can't understand, well, I get it, I suppose, but like, I don't really feel the animosity towards my loved ones. Like, I, you know, like, I can't really get that hard into his head.
And the weird thing is that, like, it doesn't seem consistent with his character that he feels this way. And I don't want to sort of generalize career-focused people with, like, people who don't have time for their family, but it feels like he's goofy and well-liked and sort of able to take life slowly, and, you know, he's successful at work, and it doesn't feel like the character we see at the beginning, you know, jives with this guy who doesn't want to talk to his parents. I mean, later, when he goes back to his, or he's talking to his ex-girlfriend, and he's saying to her, like, I had this dream where I was going to buy a mansion, and they were going to show up once, and they would say, we're so proud of you, son, and then I was never going to see them again. And that, I mean, they're telling, I guess, instead of showing. Like, I feel like showing versus telling or whatever, it just doesn't feel like the kind of character or whatever, it doesn't line up, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, because, like, I just feel like he's so, he's trying to be the life of the party all the time at work and make everybody feel better and happy, and he just wants everybody to do their best. So then when it comes to his parents, why is it such a burden? Like, where's that attitude of, like, hey, like, I want to make you laugh, I want to do this? And it's not like what we find out about his neurosis is really that, like, damaging or deep. Like, I don't want to sort of, like, say that it's nothing, you know? Like, we come to find out, and in a very disturbing scene, that Jackie Gleason refers to his mother as frigid. She had never been with anybody before their marriage, mm-hmm. and so he goes out and, like, cheats on her in order to, like, get his pleasure and stuff.
Sure.
And that's terrible and everything, but it's not like he continually forced himself upon Hanks's mom night after night. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could be so much darker. Like, I feel like the movie sort of messed up in that regard, is like, you needed this to be like Hanks was maybe beaten as a kid as well. Like, they needed to stack that deck a little more.
It just seems like an emotionless, like a loveless marriage, because she's like, he never kissed me. Like, because the guy that she went on a date with that she's kind of losing her mind about or whatever, you know, he kissed her and she's like, I don't know how to react because your father doesn't kiss me. It's just like, oh, like that. Okay. I think that's a justifiable concern and something that you would be freaked out about, but it feels like for the levels of this movie, like you're saying, like the levels of what this movie is insinuating, this how broken this relationship is, kind of needs to be a little bit more. It feels like it's just dysfunctional as opposed to broken. The only other note that I have is that at the end of the movie, or toward the end of the movie, where Hanks is like sleeping on his couch and Hector Elizondo comes in, he's like, go away. He's like, oh, you're the boss, I gotta talk to you or whatever. And they're talking about family and stuff like that. And Hanks says to him that he hears Elizondo is the perfect son, and then Hector Elizondo says, no, I hear there's only one of those. And I was like, are they talking about Jesus?
I didn't pick up on
that. I think that's what they're talking about, like the perfect son. I think, I don't know what else it would be. He's not talking about Hanks.
They can't be talking about Hanks. He can't be like, no, you're the perfect son. Like, that doesn't feel like that's what they're getting across. But there's never any prior reference to anything religious, really, in this movie.
Nope.
I don't know.
It is wild. Okay, out of all the things that we've said that we do not like about this movie, is there one in particular that stands out as your least favorite moment?
I just don't know.
I mean, there's so many options that I could choose from. I don't know.
Tell me about it.
I really don't know which one. Down the road, you could be like, remember that time that Hanks got turned on by horses and had sex with Celia Ward? To be like, oh yeah, that was kind of weird. Like, that's not my least favorite.
I think maybe my least favorite part might be Hanks dropping the F-bomb in this
all
movie.
Right.
I think that, like, it just doesn't, I mean, we're probably going to get it again, but it just didn't feel right to me. Like, I don't know, it felt more like an F-minus. And an F-bomb. Yeah, I guess I'll go with that, Hanks saying the F-word.
I think I'll go with just, like, all the forced schmaltz of the end of this movie. Like, when Hanks is pushing his dad out of the hospital and, you know, you're the last person I thought would ever come through for me. It's like, well, guy, there's 4 minutes left in the movie. Like, of course he's going to come through for you. What are you talking about?
And Hanks being like, that's all I ever needed to hear. Like, that's all you ever needed to hear is, like, yeah, my son finally came through once.
He pushed me down a hallway.
It's like, that's right, Dad. He pushed me down a hallway, and then he sat on a bench with a lady and said, this is comfortable.
This is comfortable to me, too. Cool.
And then put his head awkwardly on her, like, chest. I was like, what? What in the world?
What would this movie be like if Tom Cruise was in the role? I think it would be a lot more believable sexually.
Yeah, I think it's more of a Tom Cruise vehicle, to be honest. Like I was saying, like, it has that Rain Man vibe to it, and I think he was great in that movie. And I think you could just use that character and just drop him in this movie, really, and it could work.
I think the reason, and I'm just realizing this now, the reason I think this feels so weird to us is because I think this is a type of Tom Cruise role, the career-driven, like you're saying, like Rain Man, like this feels like the kind of role that we would see him play. And I think the reason that we sort of feel so icky about all this is because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Do you want to Stanley yourself into this? Do you want to be a part of this movie?
I'd be in any movie to be quite, just about any movie to be quite honest, with especially if Tom Hanks is in there, just go to it to see if you could find me in a Where's Waldo type fashion. But I think what I'm going to be is, oh, I know exactly who I'm going to be. I'm going to be the guy who takes care of the horses.
Oh, okay.
That guy. And I'm going to make sure no one touches those horses.
Who would I want to be? I want to be somewhere involved in the scene where Hanks and Celia Ward meet. I want to be either on the phone next to them when he first sees her, or maybe the waiter. And I just want to be like, ooh, these kids got a spark. Because it's a part of the movie that I like. I think it's a part of the movie that works well. We were talking about earlier, like you mentioned that, you think it's a cool introduction for her, which I agree with. I think all of that is just like it's the better part of the movie. I just want to be a part of that. Like, I want to be a part of the movie that I enjoy.
That has a little bit of what the opening has, where it, like, it's a reveal. Like, there's multiple reveals in conjunction with the introduction of her character. Yeah, and so that's why it works so well. There's just, where's the rest of that in this movie?
I don't know. Like, I wonder if this would be better as, like, either, like, a, not a mini series, but, like, it feels like it's two movies, kind of. You know what I mean? Like, not that I want to see this made into two movies, but it feels like just two wildly disparate halves that don't gel, and I don't know. This is real bad. We try to fix it. I don't know how you do it. I think you have to make it more tonally consistent. I just kind of wish that I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I had one thought popped into my head watching it, because I thought this is where the movie was going. I feel like we didn't see Hanks's mom for quite some time, so originally I thought maybe she passed, right? Like she died, and now dad is on his own for the first time, and I think maybe it could work that way if either parent, and it's suddenly like they're on their own, they need their only child to really lean on, and he's too busy or what have you, and they have to really figure something out.
That's the other weird thing, is that, like, the movie is ostensibly about him and his dad, but, like, he spends so much time, like, counseling his mom, and that doesn't work for me at all.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like it resolves, because she goes at the end to talk to him before the operation, to talk to Jackie Gleason, and he, like, tells her off or something, or, like, doesn't accept her apology. There's something unresolved with that whole thing, I felt, so why even kind of have it?
And especially at the very, very end, when, Hanks is at the house or whatever, and she's like, everything's set up, but I am not coming back. It's like, what?
You're on your own.
Good
And I'm like,
luck.
all right.
Okay. Does Tom Hanks in this movie do anything to put him on the road to becoming America's dad? I'm gonna read a Bible verse to you that I've been thinking about.
Whoa, here we go, talking about Jesus.
Well, that's why I thought about it.
Okay.
But when that which is perfect has come, then that which is in part will be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see in a mirror darkly, but then face to face. Scott Aukerman quotes that from time to time on Comedy Bang Bang and Freedom and stuff like that.
I was wondering why that's like my most heard Bible quote.
Sure. I want to say no, because it's not the Hanks that we know at all, but I kind of feel like this is the movie where he's like, I need to put childish things away. I need to become America's dad.
That's interesting. Like, I definitely was gonna say yes, but not until the very end when he sort of becomes, the son that takes care of the dad, and like now he's gonna be the dad. It feels weird in a way, like now I have become my father's father or something like that, where he's the caretaker. But I like that take too, Joey, because it's like I'm Tom Hanks. I can't just be Mr. Comedy all the time. Like there has to, I have to at least, dip my toe in there. Even though he sort of sank instead of swam in this particular role, like he does have it in him. I think there's a few.
He did make a splash.
He did make a splash after all, yes. Even though I don't think this movie works, he has a few moments that come through that I'm like, okay, like he has the chops. This just isn't the material.
Yeah, very, very true. All right, it is time now, unless you have any other thoughts about Nothing in Common before we get to the award ceremony.
I do not.
All right. Worst film, for sure. Nothing in Common.
Yeah.
Worst role?
Ooh.
Well, we have nothing nominated right now for worst role or best role.
No shit. We don't have anything nominated for that. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty bad. He is very annoying in this one. I didn't like that about him.
I'll put it in there. Best fight? It's not really a fist fight. He's got a couple of vocal arguments with his dad, with Jackie Gleason, but no. Best dance scene? No. Party scene? No. Best Hanks outfit? No. Best death? He doesn't die. Best line? No.
What was the line about his dick again?
You should talk. Your best friend is your dick.
And when did I learn that? Your best friend is your dick.
That's great. The four of us will go out to lunch someday.
Well, that could be best freak out. I'm okay putting that there.
I mean, that was a line in a Gary Marshall movie, so...
Best soundtrack / theme. I'm going to put it down. Nothing in Common.
What? Really?
Just theme song. We'll probably take it off. We might not even have this category.
We got to put a Spotify list together, my man. Like, this is getting nuts.
Best love story, no. Worst love story? We could do worst love story.
Oh, with the ex.
Yeah, which is... What's her name? Donna Mildred Martin? And then... Most badass role, no, or then best non-Hanks actor, male or female, gonna say no.
Nay, sorry, Jackie Gleason.
Sorry. So, we have 5 nominations. Worst film, worst role, best freak out. I'm gonna take off best soundtrack theme. I don't want to nominate this for that. And worst love story. So, worst film, worst role, worst love story, and best freak out. For the Woodies, whenever they come in 2020 or 2021. The next Hanks movie we're doing is another one with no guest, because it's another one that I've never heard of before. The next one is Every Time We Say Goodbye, also from 1986.
No, it sounds like a song title, though.
Sounds like we're definitely getting a theme song. I think you're right there.
I mean, oh man, I can't take much more of like this kind of stuff. Like I just...
Well, so let's see here. So looking ahead, Every Time We Say Goodbye, I don't know. Dragnet, I sort of have a sense of what that's going to be. I haven't seen it.
Thank goodness we got Dragnet in there. Okay. That's like a refill station.
And then after that is Big, Punchline, The Burbs, Turner & Hooch, Joe vs. Volcano, Bonfire of the Vanities, Radio Flyer, League of Their Own, Sleepless in Seattle, Philadelphia. Like, we are a few away from, like, a stretch where it's, like, known quantities, known properties.
All right, that made me feel a lot better, Joey.
I really hope so, because this is unsustainable, what we are doing right now.
No, this was such a kick in the nuts after The Money Pit.
Yeah, man, oh man. Any last thoughts about Nothing in Common before we close up shop?
Yeah, I think we could agree, Jeff. We could put this one to bed for a while.
Well, for all things Hanks and the Memories and our other sort of sister podcast, Cruise Club, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, hanks@cageclub.me. Check out our Patreon page and our Threadless shop, both of which you can find from cageclub.me, and come back next week for Born on the 4th of July on Cruise Club. So check that one out next week as we're off, as we stagger these releases every other week. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks for Every Time We Say Goodbye right here on Hanks for the Memory.
You should talk. Your best friend is your dick.
And when did I learn that? Your best friend is your dick.
That's great. The four of us will go out to lunch someday.